and what the cop's problem was. I mean, indecent exposure. Indecent is a relative term.
Good evening, everybody. David, we're on the air. David.
Okay.
We got to finish that attorney client privilege conversation later, but we're on the air. Good evening, everybody. My name is Chad Sherwood, and welcome to the Hoops HD Report, the regular season finale of the Hoops HD Report, coming to you here Monday, February 29th, leap year day. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. Joining us, first of all, the NCAA's number one puppetologist, David Griggs. David, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Where has the season gone? It seems like just the other day we were watching Sela get crushed by LSU Alexandria, and now the survive and advance portion of the season is practically underway, and tomorrow it gets technically underway.
Correct. Actually, it's beginning tomorrow night, and every night for the rest of the season, we're going to be bringing you Championship Week video notebooks. We'll also be doing more bracket rundown shows, but this is our last regular Hoops HD report. Back with us as well is Joby Fortson. Joby, how are you?
Doing well. It's been a great year. Definitely appreciate all the good basketball we've seen, but as pointed out, I do not appreciate looking at that bubble right now.
Finally joining us, the man who has not slept in 3.5 days after traveling back and forth from Cincinnati to New Jersey. John and I went to doubleheader yesterday, Xavier Seton Hall and Niagara Monmouth. John, how are you, and how much coffee have you drank the last couple of days?
Oh, I went through about 4 cups of it at work, but this is what it's going to be like for the next 2 weeks for us. There's not going to be much rest, so you might as well go ahead and get in the habit of not of getting no more than 3 or 4 hours of sleep in the middle of the night.
And if John falls asleep with us in the middle of the podcast, we'll just keep going here. Right.
It's happened before. Who would have done something like that?
Was it Scott that fell asleep on the air? It was great. I think that predated Hoops HD, but that did happen. Hopefully it's still out there somewhere on the internet.
But let's get right into it. What we want to do is go over the 9 major conferences, or maybe it's only 8 major conferences, kind of talk about news and notes in each of them and get a little bit of a look at how we're projecting some of these teams as we head into their final week of regular season play and conference tournaments next week. And let's start in the ACC, where, Joby, we just watched North Carolina pick up a win over Syracuse, although it wasn't quite the dominating win that it had been. Looked like it was going to be early on in the game.
Well, I think North Carolina had a hangover a little bit from this weekend. But they seemed to want to pull away, and they just couldn't quite do it. It's give Syracuse some credit for hanging in there. Syracuse is a tournament team, and North Carolina is a protected seed team. North Carolina won. It's not a shock, but North Carolina slip up this weekend, but they still – if they beat Duke, they're going to have a piece of the regular season title and the tiebreaker over Miami, at least.
I was actually pretty more impressed with Syracuse, despite the fact that they lost, than I thought I would be. Every time it looked like North Carolina was going to open it up and pull away, Syracuse fought back. They've always been a tough defensive team. Their defense was really good tonight. I thought that was one of the differences. And all the way down to with less than a minute to go, Syracuse was still in the game. Real good showing by them, not a damaging loss at all. A win would have been amazing for them, so I don't want to make it sound like that there was nothing to be gained. But I watched that game, and it was one of the better games I had seen Syracuse play, especially on the defensive end.
Big improvement from their performance in Syracuse, where North Carolina walked in and just completely tore them apart. I mean, right. It's, I think, 20-point difference, and it wasn't even that close if you saw it. Mm-hmm.
Well, as you mentioned, the hangover from this weekend, obviously North Carolina did go down this weekend at Virginia. Joby, your Hoos very close to the one line now, I think, most people's opinions after that huge win.
What I liked about it was that North Carolina actually came to play. And still Virginia won. That was, Barry nailed, I think, 5 threes, and that's while he's a good shooter, he's not that good a shooter. And Virginia played, despite North Carolina nailing some good shots, Virginia played very strong defense as they have all year, or not all year, the second half of the year, seems like Wake Forest. And Virginia showed why they are in contention. I'm not saying they are right now, but are in contention for a number one seed. It's going to be tough, though, because they better win that ACC tournament, because with Miami and North Carolina ahead of them with one loss, it's going to take two teams to slip up, even if Virginia runs the table the remainder of the week.
I'm really impressed with how Virginia has played, and I realize that when doing bracket projections and doing forecasts, we look at the paper. If you look a little bit beyond the paper, their only two losses since they dropped that game at Florida State back in mid-January have been a one-point loss at Duke that they really did not lose, the questionable call at the end. And the other one was a three-point loss at Miami. That's it. You know what? Those are two likely protected seeds, in some cases maybe the three-line or higher. And they went in there and almost beat them. When they play, the next time they play a protected seed in the NCAA tournament, it won't be as a true road game. If those aren't true road games, Virginia probably wins both of them. I think Virginia, and I know it's been disappointing the last 2 years in the NCAA tournament after doing so well during the regular season, this is a team that is showing that it is capable of going very, very deep in the NCAA tournament.
David mentioned a team in the ACC that none of you two have really gone into much detail yet, and that's Miami. Yeah. I know they look very bad losing in North Carolina over a week ago, but they rebounded quite nicely, not just against Virginia, but also Louisville. Let's keep in mind that Miami's only a half game behind Carolina, and they also prevented Louisville from actually getting a share of the ACC lead themselves. So let's not sleep on Miami just yet.
Agreed. Unless Miami could do something on the road, though. That's been their biggest problem.
Yeah, I mean, they do have road wins. They won at LaSalle. They won at Nebraska. I mean, let's not discount those. Won at Boston College. Won at Boston College, LaSalle, and Nebraska.
Okay. A couple other teams in the ACC actually want to discuss, but
On Miami. I want to say that I think their current coach is better than their previous one.
Okay, noted. Duke on Sunday. John, I want to ask you about this because I know neither you nor I watched the game because we were at a couple other games while I was going on. But, David, Duke went down at Pittsburgh by 14 points as well. Were you shocked by that? Can you tell me a little bit what happened? Because, honestly, I did not get to see the game.
I mean, I'm never shocked when, even if it's a highly ranked team, I'm almost never shocked when someone loses on the road to another tournament team. Pitt 14-4 at home. They hadn't been looking the best lately. I think they'd lost four of their last six coming into that game. But what did shock me, not so much the result, it was just the lethargic way Duke came out and played. I mean, just the apathy almost of not really being there. This is a road game. Duke is looking like they're trying to get a protected seed. Their profile is getting big. We've seen them play on the road this year and play well, namely at North Carolina, albeit I know that's a rival. Duke came out as if they were just so passive, as if they didn't care. And it's odd you see a Duke team as unmotivated as this one was. I mean, there are off nights. Every team has a bad night, but this was a lazy, disengaged, lethargic night.
Well, let me just say, and this might be a little bias creeping in, but I don't care. Grayson Allen should have sat. There is no – you trip a player for the second time? My God.
Well, players need to watch where they're going.
I mean, he should have sat. So the fact that they lost, I think that against a good Pitt team who the last few games haven't worked out for them, but they have been protecting the court against top 25 teams for a long time in that building. And I think karma just – came back and bit the Blue Devils on this one.
I think another reason you may want to see the ACC step in is we may see some vigilante justice like Louisville did against Grayson Allen. Because at this point, what else do the Cardinals have to lose if they go for an elbow themselves against Allen? Not that I think a team like Carolina or whoever's Duke is going to be facing next. I don't think that's going to happen, but you don't want to leave that possibility in play. This is not like baseball where you would just be throwing beanballs at each other just to keep opposing pitchers and hitters honest.
Yeah, Duke before the Carolina game this weekend does have Wake at home tomorrow night, actually. So if you're going to sit him that game, obviously. John, let me throw a couple other teams over here. Florida State had been imploding, had even lost five straight, and then over the weekend, very impressive, dominating win at home over a Notre Dame team. And now Notre Dame has lost two out of three at Georgia Tech and at Florida State, those two losses. Is this Florida State suddenly recovering, or is Notre Dame also heading in the wrong direction, in your opinion?
I wouldn't say Notre Dame is headed in the opposite direction quite yet. I mean, Georgia Tech and Florida State have not been the easiest places in the ACC, but that win by Notre Dame is about the only thing that's going to be keeping the Seminoles alive at this point, because they also have a win at home against Virginia, and they'll still have the neutral court win in Atlanta against VCU, which will at least keep them in the discussion. It's their wins against Florida and Clemson that's losing steam for Florida State.
And the fact that they've had 10 losses in the ACC right now doesn't help either. But, Joby, John mentioned Georgia Tech, and I think you've been dying to talk a little Yellow Jackets.
I am not on this Georgia Tech train as much as some people are. A lot of people all of a sudden are talking, you know, first four out, first eight out, you know, for Georgia Tech. I'm not there. I don't think the team – they've picked up some good wins. I think the game against Virginia was a fluke, absolute first-class fluke. And I have a feeling they got a second fluke against Notre Dame. I mean, you know, so the
tomorrow night at Louisville, they pick up that one?
Yeah, I mean, Georgia Tech has a chance to play themselves in. I just don't think they're that good. I mean, sorry if my eyes, you know are lying to me, but if you ask me, who would you rather play on a given day? Florida State, the team we just mentioned, who is two games, I think, below Georgia Tech in the standings, or Georgia Tech, I'll take Georgia Tech over and over again. I'd rather play in Atlanta than Florida State at home.
Because and that's the reason why I brought up Georgia Tech, is because what if they win at Louisville? What if they beat Pittsburgh at home on senior day? Suddenly the top of their profile doubles quite a bit in terms of productivity.
Talk to me about that point, and I think I might be on your bandwagon, but not yet.
Yeah. I mean, that's my thing. I have them out. They're closer. When I did my bracket yesterday, which was, if you want to see the correct bracket, what it should look like, it's on our website now. Again, there's some comments that dispute it. Those comments are wrong. Don't pay any attention to it. But Georgia Tech was alarmingly close. And I don't say that as someone that has an axe to grind against Georgia Tech. It's just you watch them play, and they're really not that good. They're not good in the last minute of games, but here they are. They're 4-1 in their last five games. They have notable wins at Florida State, and at home against, you know, Notre Dame. And I think that it's within reach to the point to where if they get these last two, they're in. I think they're out now, but if they get those last two, suddenly their profile is looking pretty good. They will be a 9-9 in the ACC. They'll be 19-12 overall. They will be 5-7 away from home in true road games. Their RPI will undoubtedly get into the 60s or 50s if they win those. And, you know, they will have beaten Louisville, who's not a tournament team, but it's a tournament-caliber team, on the road. I think if they win the next two, they're in. But to Joby's point, are they good enough? Probably not.
It's not a snake pit, but it's certainly a hornet's nest this year.
Let's keep moving here. We do have a lot to get to. I want to talk a little Big East next. John, you and I were at the Xavier game yesterday, and after what a huge home win over Villanova earlier in the week, I know we arrived about 5 minutes late because you had a little bit of parking issues into the game. I did not see a Xavier team that even looked like an NCAA tournament team yesterday, quite honestly. They were completely clueless on offense, I thought, and could not figure out Seton Hall's defense, which was nothing incredible that Seton Hall was throwing at them.
Yeah, it was quite incredible to see how fast the tempo of that game had gotten at times, but in some ways it was reminiscent of Xavier getting off to bad starts against both Villanova and Creighton. what's amazing is earlier in the year, Xavier was able to overcome a similarly bad start at Wake Forest, but somehow managed to pull a rabbit out of their hat to avoid what would have been their only disastrous loss this year. But take nothing away from Seton Hall. They certainly look like a team that punched their NCAA ticket yesterday and left no doubt in their trail.
And how about Seton Hall? 8-1 in their last nine. Wins at Creighton. And I know Creighton is not a tournament team, but it is a snake pit. They had the big win against Xavier yesterday. They clobbered Providence earlier in the week. I mean, absolutely clobbered them. So this is a Seton Hall team that's playing really well. We'll get to this on Thursday. It's a team you don't want to see in March, but we'll get to that on Thursday.
Yeah. Couple of teams, though. Butler and Providence are I guess these are now your two bubble teams in the Big East. Neither team has really been playing great as of late, to say the least here. Butler with Seton Hall and Marquette at home, Providence, Creighton at home, and road games against St. John's. I think both of them may need to win both the remaining games here if they want to feel safe.
Yeah, well, it's a weak bubble. I think Butler could absorb one of those losses, so long as it isn't Marquette. But you know, Butler has—I mean, they're 5-2 in their last seven. They've won the games that they were supposed to win. They did win at Seton Hall, so I mean, you got to give them some credit for that. Like Seton Hall, 8-1 in their last nine. The one they didn't win was at home against Butler. I think these two are relatively safe, but I wouldn't call them locks by any means.
Well, Joby, we were talking about Providence before we went on the air. I mean, Providence has two incredible wins at Arizona and even more probably the win at Villanova.
Yeah.
But not much more beyond that. That may be the problem here.
Right, exactly. I mean, they swept their fellow bubble mate Butler. That's true. May come down to that component. I think they're both in. The weak bubble, the SMU-Louisville factor of two free spots, I think they're both on the right side. But I don't think they're comfortable at all. Like, for instance, you mentioned, as long as you're not Marquette, as long as it's not St. John's, well, you know, a loss, you know, to one of those guys, they're in deep trouble. Then all of a sudden they got to make noise in the Big East tournament. They're probably on the wrong side and need to fight their way back in. But, yeah, I think right now they're on the cliff hanging with fingers. I don't think it's comfortable. I don't think they're on 2 feet on the other side of the cliff yet.
Okay.
There's also the Creighton factor that's still in play in the Big East. They're currently a game ahead of Providence and Butler in the standings, but the Blue Jays are going to have the toughest road to finish conference play because they have to go to Providence and then they have to go to a Xavier team that's going to be looking for revenge on two different fronts.
Right. And if you're Providence and you're in a situation where it's like, okay, you're most of the way there. All you have to do is beat Creighton at home and then go to St. John's and win. And the good news is you're playing St. John's and not Fordham. St. John's is actually worse this year. You know, St. John's lost by 20-something to, I think it was Incarnate Word or somebody. But knowing Providence, I think they're going to lose both of the next two games, Creighton and St. John's, and then I think they will win the Big East tournament.
That would be a very Providence thing to do, absolutely.
Well, when you have a player like Dunn, that's possible. I mean, believe it or not. Yeah.
Let's move over to one of the more surprising things this season. Congratulations to the Indiana Hoosiers, the Big Ten champion, regular season champions this year. And right now, I still think that they are probably the third, if not the fourth, best team in the conference, though. Is this imbalanced conference schedule, David? Is that all this came down to?
It definitely is. Now, they've already clinched it. They go to Iowa. Iowa is sort of going in the wrong direction. You know, they're sweating out a lot of games that they should – that earlier in the year they were winning without too much trouble. It wouldn't shock me if they lost both those, although I do think they'll beat Maryland at home in the last game, but it's an imbalanced schedule, but you know what? They've won the games they were supposed to win, which is a lot more than I thought they'd be able to do after watching them before conference play. I mean, this is a team that struggled in a lot of games that you would have expected them to win fairly easily.
I know it's easy to say they'll be sending gift baskets to Nebraska, Illinois, and Minnesota. Mm-hmm.
I mean, these were two of their – I mean, this is a team that lost to Duke and UNLV, and what? Or, I'm sorry, to Wake Forest and UNLV, and was absolutely torn apart by Duke, all within about a week of each other. And after watching them play for that week, you just kind of not wrote them off. But since then, they've won the games they were supposed to win.
And they turned their season around against Notre Dame, which I'm hearing mentioned earlier with Florida State and some others. Yeah, it seems like everybody turns their season around with Notre Dame. Might be a little too late for some of our friends in the ACC to do so, but it's interesting. They look like a different team.
Well, and the other team in the Big Ten, Michigan State, I argued today, I know, Dave, you didn't have them there. I've seen other people, other brackets out there. I think Michigan State is right there on the one line at the moment. Maybe it's them or Virginia at the moment, with Kansas, Oklahoma, and Villanova all looking like solid one seeds. But, John, Michigan State run off four straight wins, including Indiana and Wisconsin. Your thoughts on this Michigan State team? Are they a one seed?
I gave them a slight edge over Virginia right now. But let's not forget, Michigan State also had a great start to the year with the win in Chicago against Kansas. They also had the win against Providence down in Anaheim as part of the Wooden Legacy, and that win is still holding some legs, but not as strong as it was back in December and January. But the Louisville win is also going to look big in addition to Michigan State's body of work. Had they not been swept by Iowa, they'd be a unanimous number one seed right now.
Yeah, I mean, other than Iowa, and Iowa beat them pretty convincingly twice. Their losses are this: at Wisconsin by one, at Nebraska by one, and at Purdue by one.
The Nebraska game was a home game, actually, but...
I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, oh, I guess that shoots my point straight to hell. Yeah, this team is terrible.
They're terrible. All right. David, we mentioned this last week. I've got to throw it out there again. Ohio State... they're sitting here at 11-6 in the Big Ten, which most years is a NCAA tournament, at least bubble type of record. Any shot in hell that Ohio State gets the at-large bid, short of maybe making the Big Ten championship game and winning at Michigan State this weekend?
Well, after they took UCLA last year, you just never know. But, I mean, these are their wins. These are the 11 wins. At Northwestern, not a tournament team. Rutgers, never mind. Penn State, not a tournament team. Illinois, not a tournament team. Northwestern, not a tournament team. Rutgers, again, not a tournament team. Michigan at home. Michigan's a bubble team. Nebraska, not a tournament team. Iowa. So of the
Nebraska's not a tournament team? What?
You got to give them credit for that. Of their 11 wins, nine are against non-tournament teams. Another is against a bubble team at home, against a Michigan team that hasn't played well on the road. So they've got one good win.
And then you throw in their losses at home to UT Arlington, Louisiana Tech, and a neutral court loss to Memphis.
But
what about Michigan?
The thing is, they have to win over Kentucky, so that's a nice little win.
I mean, is Iowa Kentucky?
Their Georgia Tech were the better name, to be very honest.
Well, okay, Iowa and Kentucky, and especially if they get another couple wins in the Big East if they win the Big East tournament, that would really, really be impressive since they don't play in that. But, if they get a couple wins in the Big Ten tournament, I would not be looking at them, but it's more than what UCLA did a year ago. They've already done more than what UCLA did a year ago.
Joby, Michigan Wolverines now by having lost 3 out of 4 and are sitting here with three top 100 wins, period.
But those three wins, I know they were early. They're all top 25 wins.
It's a neutral court win over Texas, home wins over Maryland and Purdue.
Yeah, I mean, I think Michigan is in a very similar position to our Big East teams we discussed earlier. They have some nice wins that are beat other people that are competing on the tournament line. But, man, are they just – I mean, once again, it's another team hanging by their fingers, not standing comfortably in the tournament.
That game against Texas was much more important than just a fifth-place game in the battle for Atlantis.
Oh, yes. For sure.
Yeah. Oh, without the Texas win, they probably would be out right now. I mean, that's how tenuous their position is.
Well, John, let's talk some briefly about the Big 12. I think we got a conference here that's a solid seven teams that are all in. I don't think there's any bubble talk of the Big 12 at all. But the question, I guess, is do we have 2-1 seeds here in both Kansas and Oklahoma?
Right now we have a pair of number one seeds, but depending on how things play out in other conference tournaments, it would still behoove Oklahoma, for example, to win the Big 12 tournament to be absolutely sure they'll be able to get a number one seed, because if someone in the Big Ten or the ACC makes noise, it's going to be hard to get two number one seeds out of the same conference. And the Big East learned that the hard way on Sunday.
Well, yeah. You got West Virginia here, who's a game ahead of Oklahoma in the standings in a full double round robin. Two games left, Texas Tech at home at Baylor. They win those both. Don't they have an argument they belong above Oklahoma? They did finish better than them.
Yeah, I mean, that's their argument.
Okay. I think West Virginia's problem was their schedule preseason wasn't as strong as what Oklahoma had put together.
Right. And I realize that all of you have been huge on Oklahoma all year long. They've been your all's favorite team. I've liked them, but not as much as you all. And, you know, when you start to see a couple things, like they sweat out Memphis early in the year, but they win. They sweat out Hawaii early in the year, and they win. You know, they lose at Kansas State. They lose at Texas Tech. They had some other close games. You know, that happens a few times. It's an off night. It happens as much as it's happened to Oklahoma, you know, LSU being another one. Maybe they're not as invincible as you all thought, because I never once said that I thought Oklahoma was invincible. Not once.
Okay.
I think Oklahoma is a lot closer to the Michigan State-Virginia conversation than maybe we've said. Kansas is the number one overall seed in my book pretty solidly. Oh. Yeah. And Villanova's a nice two ahead of them. But I think there's a little more of a grouping, and we'll get to another conference that I think you can add some more discussion to on that.
Yeah, and their last two games at home against Baylor and then at TCU, I think they win both of those. Oklahoma can definitely get a one seed still.
Let's
talk about Texas Tech.
I mean, a one seed team, that, but
yeah, I've been huge on Texas Tech all year.
We're not going to be getting into this again, David. Let's move over to the Pac-12, and I know we all like Oregon, both Oregon and Utah, what they're doing at the top, but I've got a couple teams I want to discuss. John, you know, you mentioned this, I think, in your notes today, responding to David's bracket. The Arizona Wildcats have two top 50 wins, both at home, and that's it against the top 50. They got a lot they did against the top 100, but they don't have the top 50 wins there. That at one point, we were talking protected seed. Do you think they're there? Do you think that they're even wearing white in the first round?
Well, the fact that they're going to be wearing white is going to be much more tenuous, considering their only win against a team that I would definitely have in the field right now is Southern Cal. Oregon State, I think, is also going to be in there, but I'm not 100% sure they're going to make the tournament. But I think I had also pointed out, if they lose their final two games this year, I'm not going to have Arizona on my first ballot.
Yeah, Cal and Stanford both at home. They go 0-2 in those, David. The Wildcats could be in trouble. Maybe they not could. For a bid, but for anything close to wearing white.
Right. Let me ask you this about Arizona, and it's an impossible question, but I want to get your opinions on it anyway. We all know what the NAB – well, maybe our audience does it. The NABC rankings do you want me to explain those, or do you want
sure,
to explain
go ahead.
Them? Okay. The NABC rankings are essentially, they work very much like the coaches' poll. There's one coach from each of the 32 conferences. They submit a top 15 list for the teams in their geographic region. So I think it's East, South, West, and Midwest. And the committee takes that into consideration, and there's also interviews throughout the year with those advisors, as they're called, but they're really just coaches. To get an idea of the teams. Now, people like us have no way of knowing who's voting for who or who's saying what about who. But the coaches' poll is pretty. I guess that's the closest thing to come to measure it, just because it's also made up of one coach from each conference, and I guess the AP poll is too. The polls like Arizona. Is it you know, and sometimes when you see a team that's that highly ranked, even if the rest of their paper isn't there, is it ridiculous to assume that maybe the NABC likes Arizona as well?
Well, you look at it, I mean, we said two top 50 wins. On the other hand, you've got
another
10 in the top 100. You got 12 top 100 wins, which is a huge number. So it's a real strange balancing act of what do you look at, top 50, top 100, top 25, top 25.
I think you start to divide a little bit in this case, though, of what John hinted at, is look at those 10 in the top 100, because often you'll find teams ranked in the 50s and 60s that are very good tournament teams that are just as good as a team that's ranked in the 30s or 40s.
Well, let's look at the wins.
That's not the case. Gonzaga is out, in my opinion. You know, I mean, you only have two teams that are in my field right now. I mean, it's and those are the two top 50 players.
And USC is kind of going in the wrong direction here. We could also mention that.
USC is going the wrong direction. Yes.
Yeah, USC hasn't done that much on the road.
It's not an elite top. It's not a top 25 win anymore. It used to be. It's now a top 50 win, and with due reason and deservedly so.
I think if you look at USC's last four games, it's really looking like a miracle now that they're able to pull a rabbit out of their hat against Colorado, because otherwise they would be 7-9 in the Pac-12 and going in complete free fall.
They are. I mean, they've lost five of their last six, and one of them was to Arizona State, for crying out loud.
Now, I want to make a case here in the Pac-12. I made it a little bit in the notes today. Stanford Cardinal have won four out of five games, including beating Oregon, who's in the one seed discussions, including beating USC, who we just discussed. They've got two games left at Arizona State, at Arizona, both winnable, especially the way Arizona's been playing. That would give them a total of six top 50 wins, two on the road at Arizona and at Oregon State. They've beaten Utah. They've beaten Oregon, both protected seeds. They have a ton of losses, but every single loss they have other than their game at Washington is to a team that is either going to be in the field or SMU, who should be in the field but is not because of probation. They got the number four strength of schedule in the country on top of that. I think that the Cardinal deserve a serious look.
They played Carroll College. If they win these...
Did they lose to Carroll College?
No, they didn't. Okay. If they get these two wins at Arizona State and at Arizona, I don't see how you cannot at least look at them.
I know it's going to be a ton of losses. That would put them at 13 losses with a Pac-12 tournament loss. But that would give them 16-13 against D1, 17-13 if they get one Pac-12 tournament win. I think with the number four strength of schedule in this conference, the Pac-12 this year, I think that merits you being in.
Yeah, and
if I'm a team like Michigan, I'd be terrified if Stanford were able to win at Arizona.
When I watch them, I'm not impressed. I mean, I know they blasted USC, but everybody blasts USC at home. They had the home win against Oregon. I was actually, to be honest, a little more disappointed in Oregon than I was impressed with Stanford. They just got blasted by Oregon State in the game before. But the paper will merit looking at if they get the next two. I do agree with Chad on that, but I guess what I'm saying is let's wait till they get to the next two and then come talk to me.
I actually think they're in better position, though, and this is what you're hinting at, Chad. We talked about Georgia Tech or Ohio State having a chance to play their way in. I think Stanford's a heck of a lot further along than those two teams.
They're further along. They have more winnable games left, and they have better chances being in the Pac-12 than you have.
Their biggest enemy is obviously their overall record.
I don't think that'll matter much.
As long as that overall record, even if I don't know what they're slated to play in the Pac-12 tournament, they can play Washington State and win it. That's actually a great thing for them because they need to pile up wins more than the strength of schedule.
Well, okay, here's the other thing. Two true road wins. That's it. They win the next two, they double that.
Exactly.
And certainly they're looking a lot better.
But, you know, the whole Pac-12 is composed of home court heroes, including Cal, who I think is starting to really approach, my God, protected seed status, do we dare say, with their ridiculous home court heroism?
Yeah.
Let's turn over to the SEC quickly, and Kentucky thought we had their road woes solved when they went and pounded South Carolina a couple weeks ago. Now they've lost at A&M and then at Vanderbilt this past weekend. Joby, can you figure out this Kentucky team?
No, they're young, they're inconsistent, and you don't want to face them in March. True.
We're going to run through all of this later in the week.
And yet this is a team that continues to fall upward.
What they've done is they allowed A&M to right the ship, and they actually handed Vanderbilt maybe. I mean, we were talking about Vanderbilt the same way we just were talking about Stanford and Georgia Tech and Ohio State a few weeks ago. Well, Vanderbilt's actually delivered, and Kentucky was a big part of that. Now, the question is, was it more Vandy or was it more Kentucky is the question. Kentucky might be so inconsistent, though, but they do win, and they have the potential to have huge wins, Duke, you know, et cetera. Boy, you can't figure them out, but they probably are the team you least want to play in this entire conference.
Well, you mentioned Vanderbilt, one at Florida, home win over Kentucky. They got Tennessee at home and A&M on the road to end the season. Huge game at A&M on Saturday.
Yeah.
David, Vanderbilt, this was our dark horse heading into the season, right?
Well, and somehow, as I say, like if you're everyone's dark horse, you're no one's dark horse. I think Vanderbilt has proven me incorrect because they became a dark horse after the way they began the season. They went through a stretch where I think they lost, let me see here, it was 6 out of 8, and this was, in December, and it led in the conference play. They had 3 straight losses to begin conference play. Yeah, at that point, when they went 2-6 in that stretch, they became a dark horse. And now here they are. I mean, they've actually looked pretty good, and I kind of wrote them off, but, they've won 5 out of their last 6. You mentioned the teams that they have beaten, winning at Florida, and then, the big win against Kentucky.
I'll tell you who the real dark horse in the SEC is right now, and that's Mississippi State. They're screwing up 3 different resumes on their own right now.
Yeah.
South Carolina and Vanderbilt. And Alabama on the road.
Yeah. Oh, right. How about that? How about this Alabama team, John? They broke the losing streak by beating Auburn at home over the weekend. Arkansas home, Georgia on the road. I think they need both of those absolutely, and maybe more than that, to get in.
Yeah, Arkansas is another team that's not completely going away, and they're still showing quite a bit of fight. But Alabama, that was a pretty nice way to rebound after getting the losses, not just against Mississippi State, but also a bad blowout loss at Kentucky. I mean, Alabama still has a few ugly warts on their resume. Road game at Auburn, LSU, losses at Ole Miss, and also Vandy, which is not looking as bad now.
Yeah, this is a championship week notebook tidbit here, but getting back to Mississippi State, here's some of their losses. Texas A&M by 1, Tennessee by 5, Florida by 3, Alabama by 2. This is a team that, while not talented, they've actually, I think that Ben Howland's actually done a really good job coaching this team, and they're kind of hitting their stride now. Now, they can't get into the NCAA without winning that last game in the conference tournament, but they might really ruin some people's day between now and whenever it is they do lose.
They've come quite a long way since they lost at home to Southern back in December.
Yeah.
Southern University, by the way.
Yeah, Southern by 4, Texas Tech by 2. Love that Texas Tech team have all year. The Ruse, but yeah, they've had a lot of close losses.
Let's move over to the Bubble Conference, a.k.a. the American, where the entire conference, I can't even tell you who the best team in this conference is. I think that they all have almost identical profiles at the moment. When you look at Temple, Cincinnati, Tulsa, UConn, Joby, UConn losing at home to Houston yesterday. How can you do that and be in the tournament?
Now, that's when we're talking about teams that are hanging in and, oh, I'll use the Alabama case. Yeah, Alabama needs to win those games. I don't think they need more work after that, because then they're ahead of teams like UConn who aren't putting in the work. Tulsa, not putting in the work. And so I actually had – I've been flipping back and forth on my own personal bracket, having, oh, I have four or five American teams in. Oh, no, now I only have one. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Luckily, the tournament of the American tournament is going to sort out and be an elimination tournament for the big dance, so to speak. And so, I mean, if you're going to watch one tournament, maybe that's the one to do it, because the games, even starting in some of the quarters, will be play-in games.
Yeah, David, Temple swept Cincinnati, swept UConn, but they've banned losses. Tulsa just lost at Memphis yesterday. Maybe Houston's the hottest team in the conference right now.
They are. And let's, pulling up Houston here, you can see it on my screen. They're really not that bad here. I mean, if you look at it, they really are hot, and their losses, the close game at Temple. Here's something that is bad. The non-conference strength of schedule, that is amazingly bad.
You want to go back to that schedule, David? There is a loss to South Florida with which they're going to need a waiver if they want to get into the tournament.
Yeah.
Houston's RPI was sitting entering conference play, despite having a very gaudy, nice record, at like 150. I mean, they were some remarkable like 11-1. And
there's 177. 77 is not an NCAA tournament number, but
no, it's not.
No. But they're playing. The reason it's low.
Play their way to a decent.
I mean, say they played a horrendously weak schedule instead of, like, say they played the 200 strength of schedule. Their RPI is probably in the 50s, and that's still horrendously bad. 317. How do you even do that?
let's move quickly over to the Atlantic 10, where Dayton, John, you're being our Ohio guy. The Flyers are another team heading in the wrong direction at the wrong time, having dropped 3 out of 4 now, including at home to Rhode Island this weekend.
Yeah, about the only good news that Dayton had was at least getting Kendall Pollard back in game action, but that still wasn't enough to overcome Rhode Island. And this was also the same week where they were very lucky to avoid what would have been a disastrous upset at St. Louis.
They should have lost that game too, yeah.
And they've got a very tricky week coming up with a trip at Richmond, which is never easy. And then they close out the season at home against VCU, who's still fighting for their own tournament life right now.
David, you want to defend VCU? You had them in your field this week above the first four. I know you had them in as the auto bid, but above the first
four. Well, I'd rather think of it as not liking the teams below them rather than liking them. But, you know, 7 true road wins, not bad. They have the win at St. Joe's. I like that. St. Joe's has been really good at home. Yeah. They have the win at Richmond, wins at David's. I mean, they have a lot of decent stuff, but not much good stuff. And I think I had them at 40 on my S-curve, really just ahead. I mean, one or two spots inside the first four. The teams I had below them, Oregon State, a home court hero, Michigan, we just talked about them. Cincinnati, we talked about them. And was it Butler? I forget. I'd have to look. But I forget who the other team was. But
While we're in this conference, though, what about St. Bonaventure? Joby, I think you said that you kind of look at them as a tournament team.
I was looking at them because of paper. I've now gone out of my way to watch a few St. Bonaventure games in a row. And my eyes are bleeding. They are not a good team. I mean, they beat UMass on a hope and a prayer just a couple days ago. I mean, it's they're not that good. But you know what? At some point, the paper, if they make a run, they're LaSalle part two.
I mean, the paper is. Okay.
The paper's not half bad.
And they show sign of playing good. The win at St. Joe's, and again, was a pretty impressive win. They won by 10, but they actually opened up a really big lead in that game. St. Joe's came back. You mentioned making a point to, you know, having to watch it. Well, you really have to make a lot of effort to watch some of these Atlantic games. They're, you know, streamed on the A10 network. That Joe's game was one of them. But, you know, we watched it, and I remember being rather impressed with it. But they followed that up by a three-point win at St. Louis. They go to Fordham, win by four. They lose out in the South. And then they sweat out Dayton and UMass at home. But, again, it's St. Mary's, but I think they're slightly better than St. Mary's because at least they've done something. St. Mary's has done nothing but sweat out bad teams at home all year, but they keep winning.
Well, that's a good transition, John. St. Mary's made the coaches poll top 25 this week. They push it with the Gales. They've got a huge home game coming up tomorrow night against the Grand Canyon Antelopes, but if they get that one somehow, which would take a miracle, make it to the West Coast Conference Championship game there, lose there to Gonzaga or BYU, hopefully for bracketologists everywhere, it's Gonzaga. Are the Gales an NCAA tournament team?
Well, I think for right now it's going to help that they're at least tying for first place, although I think it would have helped a little bit more had they been able to get an outright win over both Gonzaga and BYU. But I still think that sweep over Gonzaga does give them a valuable ace in the hole, though, when we're talking about teams with other, non-Power 5 resumes that they're going to be compared with.
David, I think you want to respond.
I just don't like St. Mary's. To answer your question, though, I do think that gets them in. I think the committee will take them with a resume like that. I'm clearly in the minority here. I just don't know what it is. And it's not that I never watch these. I watch just about all the games. And when you see them barely beat Loyola Marymount, Portland, when you watch them sweat out game after game after game against teams that really aren't very good, you start to get to the conclusion, Pacific being another, that maybe they're not that good themselves. But that's
the beauty of getting the number one seed. They don't have to beat both Gonzaga and BYU. They just need to beat one of them to get to the title.
But if they win against the team of the people, it honestly would not shock me if Grand Canyon went in there and beat them. But if they win that game and if they play their way to the championship game, yes, I think they're in. And I think the committee will honestly, if we're going to guess the committee, which we don't, we're our own committee, but I think the committee puts them inside the first four if they do that.
Joby, one more team. Wichita State also made the coaches poll top 25 today. They really did for whatever reason. 23-7 overall. They obviously should win both the quarterfinal, the semifinal of the Missouri Valley. They'll get the winner of Southern Illinois and Northern Iowa. Would winning those two games be enough, or do they also have to get the automatic bid?
I think they might. Boy, it's close. They are on the right side of the bubble if the season ended today. And the Utah win's really nice. I mean Utah, that's not just a protected seed. I think we, as a group and the media writ large, is undervaluing Utah. Wichita State, you know, I think that they are in right now. If they perform well and lose to a reasonable team in the final, Evansville, I don't know the bracket by memory, but a team that's a top 100 MVC team.
It would have to be Evansville. That's
they're going to be in. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to be in.
David, we failed to mention the Mountain West. Was this an oversight by our part, or should they be on the under the radar shows?
Under the radar doesn't want them. It is a regular multi-bid league. They expanded for football reasons, and boy, did that help their basketball. Gee whiz. San Diego State, Joby mentioned his eyes bleeding. I don't know what to say about a team. It misses, was it nine straight free throws to end the game? Was it nine? Or was it
seven straight free throws? They had the game won over Boise State and somehow blew it. It was what we call a waking around here.
Yes.
San Diego State and Butler were both doing jackass tryouts this weekend, but,
yes.
But I guess San Diego State actually won for losing because Butler managed to hold on against Georgetown in overtime.
Right, and Boise State is capable of playing well. I mean, there's teams that are in this conference, well, two, that are capable of playing well but don't always do it and don't do it enough to where they belong in without the automatic bid. But, I just don't – it's – and there have been other times too. Like, you know, they had the loss at Fresno State, who's not that good. They had to sweat out Colorado State at home, had to barely win at Nevada. And I realized that in conference play, you're in a situation where teams are familiar with you because they see you year after year after year and usually multiple times every year. But this is not a good league this year. If San Diego State is a bubble team or is inside the bubble, they should have blown through this league. And I know they only have two losses, but they have no wins against tournament teams and two losses to sub-tournament teams. I don't think they're in without the automatic bid. I don't think they are. Well, what do you guys think? I mean, the committee.
I still think it's an interesting case if they win these next two last two regular season games, make it to the finals, just because it is that almost that name brand. Oh, it's the Mountain West regular season champions. But I agree with you. I do not think they have the resume to support it.
They do have one tournament win. I mean, Cal is the tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that enough to carry it? And
I don't think it is.
Yeah, and the losses aren't bad. Yeah, I mean, it isn't like they didn't go out there and do what Chattanooga did. I mean, they at least lost to semi-formidable teams in Fresno and Boise, but I don't know. I think if they finish first outright, which they have, if they win these last two games and avoid a bad loss in the quarters, the committee, I'm 50-50 on it. I know that I won't be arguing for them when we do our committee, though.
I think as an A-10 fan who sat through the nightmare that was 2000, 2004, 2005 in the one bid league,
yeah.
I think GW was a 11 or 12 seed that year. San Diego State be able to top that?
Yeah.
Or will they fall below that?
I think if they pull the double, they do win out, including winning the conference tournament, they could toe the 11 line, but that's about it. I think that's their cap.
Yeah.
And they have something the committee I've noticed really, really, really hates. You slip up to one of the dregs of college basketball, they don't give you a lot of leeway. I mean,
no.
that loss to San Diego, USD, really has a really bad taste. I know it's crosstown. But
it was outside, so it doesn't count. So.
Yeah.
Well, you got to look at it this way. They lost to San Diego, but I think they kind of made up for that by playing Grand Canyon as close as they did.
On that note, that concludes our Hoops HD report section of the show, but we are not done yet. Going forward, we are going to be doing our championship week video notebooks, in which every night we are going to be reviewing all the conference tournament action, previewing the following night's conference tournament action, and updating our and showing updates of our survival board.
Yeah, and conference tournament page updates as well. Well,
right.
Yeah. A notebook. We're going to go over all the notes, and down below us, well, you won't see this today, but you're going to see notes.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing.
Absolutely. But what we are going to do right now, pulling up on my screen, if it worked, should be tomorrow night's games, as we're going to have six conference tournament games tomorrow night, and this is the Atlantic Sun bracket for tomorrow. Four games, North Florida against Upstate, Gulf Coast against Kennesaw, Jacksonville against Lipscomb, NJIT against Stetson. And
yes.
We've got two things we like to do when we start a new conference every year. We like to begin by getting our predictions as to who we think is going to win the conference tournament. And also, as far as the four games tomorrow, is there any potential upsets here? So, John, let me start with you here. Your thoughts on who wins the automatic big bid out of the A-Sun, and do you think there's going to be an upset tomorrow?
I think this league is going to be a complete wild card, but I'll follow that up by saying Jacksonville is probably going to be my choice to win this league.
Okay, Joby, do you agree with Jacksonville, and do you see anything crazy tomorrow night's games?
I think the top four, particularly the top three, are head and shoulders above the next one, so I don't see the upsets. Maybe it's a sympathetic call. You know, once the team of the people, always the team of the people. Let's go NJIT.
NJIT. David, Joby actually stole it. I'm going to go with the Highlanders as well. Until they lose, they're my team in this conference.
Highlanders! That's my team.
You go with them too?
Yeah, and I like how they went. They had some head-scratching losses earlier in the season. I think they've gotten it turned around and are going in the right direction. Chad, we got to do something else, and we may have done it on the fly, but we have to assign our losing your screwed teams to each other tonight.
Well, I haven't even thought of one for you yet, David. Why don't we do this tomorrow night?
Okay, I got yours. So
okay, well, go ahead, give me mine.
NJIT.
All right, I got NJIT.
Yeah. We have yet to assign someone a team that's even gotten past the quarters yet.
So that may happen. Well, David,
that's not true. Kyle Lamb's Texas Southern team did actually make it to the NCAA tournament 2 years ago.
Yeah. We also have one other conference that is starting tomorrow night. Give me a half a second here. We'll be pulling up that bracket. Hopefully it comes up here in a second on the same screen. Can we see it here? The Patriot League.
Yeah, yes. Sort of.
Hey, let's scroll up a bit. How's that? A little better?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
There we go. That might work a little better there.
Yeah.
Patriot League starts tomorrow night with its 8-9, 7-10 games. Holy Cross at Loyola, Lafayette at Navy. I'm going to start with myself on this one. My pick to win this conference is the Bucknell Bison. I know that this conference has kind of been all over the place, and it's kind of almost crazy to go with the one seed given how much parity there is, but I am going to go there. And, David, I'm also going to assign you Army as your team, as your team for this year.
And it's a good pick because the Army wants people like me. Fine specimens defending the nation. That's me. So, all right. I'm excited about Army. We got to get Joby and John a team here.
Well, let's start with Joby, John. How about you start with your picks to win the Patriot League tournament?
I'll let Joby go first this time.
I'll go chalk on Bucknell. Will say I do have an upset that David will not get a win.
Oh, you think Colgate wins at West Point? Okay, that's coming up on Thursday night.
I'm going with Army. I think they make the first ever NCAA tournament.
I just think toothpaste will come to play.
Lafayette here, interestingly enough, last year's tournament champion, the 10 seed down there playing at Navy tomorrow night. John, your pick on this in this conference?
I'm not going to go toothpaste or the home of the crayon factory, but I will go with Lehigh here.
Lehigh. Okay. Well, those are the games for tomorrow night. We'll be back tomorrow night with our Championship Week video notebook to take a look at those games. We do have one other thing we'd like to look at here, if we can get it up. David, do you want to assign teams to Joby and to John while I'm looking for things?
I've got Joby's. I'll need some help with John's. Joby, you're not going to – I don't know what the temperature is in the state of Virginia when it comes to the other regional teams. I don't know if it's friendly, tense, or what, but this is a team that's had – this is a program that's much improved in recent years, but still can't make the tournament. Made the tournament. Bill and Mary is your team.
I like Bill and Mary. I'm more than happy to take that on. It's kind of like Chad with NJIT. I like Bill and Mary.
Yeah, you're screwed, right? They're not the talent.
This Mr. Jefferson's alumni.
On that note, I can give John his team because he was talking about them last time we was on our podcast. John, you called them Mother Miami. Miami of Ohio.
Oh, the Red Hawks.
The other Miami.
Yeah.
That will be your team. And finally, pulling up my screen right now, this is our NCAA tournament survival board as of 15 minutes ago. It is completely up to date. We are going to be updating this every night on the air starting tomorrow night. But heading into tomorrow with the beginning of conference tournament plays, we are at 323 asterisk teams remaining. Yes. David, can you tell us why this board is so important?
Well, okay, yes. I mean, and again, well, let's get the board up there. This is the most valuable and reliable resource that is available to the selection committee. The way it works is, you know, they moved the hotel from Indianapolis to New York, and they did it for media reasons. And I can only assume that one of the things is that they just the internet wasn't working well enough in the Indianapolis hotel, so they had to move it to New York so they could more easily access this survival board. It's available on the internet. They look at it, and it basically tells them what teams they need to be putting in the field and what teams they need to be considering of maybe putting in the field, and then what teams they shouldn't even be looking at unless they win an automatic bid. They come to this site, and they look at it, and they just know what to do.
Yeah, and if we scroll down here, you can see, for example, looking in the ACC there, there are teams that are in bowl, like Duke, Miami, North Carolina. Those teams have to be in. If they leave them out, they screwed up.
Right, they just completely screwed.
Other teams in italics, like Georgia Tech, Clemson, Notre Dame, Pittsburgh, teams to consider. They could be in, could be out. And this will change every night. We'll be updating things as games go along.
Right.
And then a team like Boston College or Wake Forest, why are they still on the board even?
Well, because they can still win the automatic bid.
Okay. And that's their only way in, though.
Right, yeah, and that's their only way in.
John, we have an asterisk up there, though. It's kind of explained down here on the bottom. But we see 8 teams in the WAC, even though the WAC will only have 7 teams right now in its conference tournament. Why is that?
That's because Grand Canyon still has a pending waiver to get into the WAC tournament. Yes. But I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but wouldn't they be over their maximum if they were to play in the WAC tournament and also play at St. Mary's at the same time?
They'll need an additional waiver.
Well, no. They have that. This the St. Mary's game will be their 31st game, and they did play 4 games in an exempt event, so this actually is permissible. They did not schedule an extra game, so they can. They technically could have scheduled an extra game, but they did not do that. They can still get the waiver and can compete in the WAC tournament. We did confirm
that. Good thinking,
Chad. But we are still working on that, and so the Lopes waiver movement is not dead yet. But on that note, I guess let's turn here and run through any final thoughts by everybody. Joby, let me start with you.
I was going to touch on a team that all of us say has sneakily moved up to maybe even the 3 line. And that's the Texas Longhorns. Then I look up and see they're losing, basically getting doubled on pace to lose 100-50 to the Kansas Jayhawks. Kansas is good, but a 3 seed should not lose at home by 50 points. so instead, I will make a nice little stat that Lee Delvecchio pointed out to us. Tomorrow night, the national title will be decided because Virginia plays at Clemson. If Virginia wins that game, they will be 500 and have a shot at a number one seed. And those teams who have been number one seeds in the modern era with a 500 record, both went on to win the national title, Duke and Michigan State.
Okay. John, would you like to follow up on that?
I would have liked my chances so much better in regards to Mother Miami if we were talking about the NCAA hockey tournaments. But alas, this is not hockey HD. This is hoops HD.
David.
Kind of an under-the-radar comment. We had our last under-the-radar show last week, and again, but we'll be covering that in the notebooks. And I just want to say that Chattanooga, Monmouth, who else? Little Rock, these are all teams that had great seasons, especially Chattanooga, Hawaii, another one, Akron, another one, teams that we had liked all year long. And I'm really hoping they win their conference tournaments because they've played their way into a situation to where if they don't, they'll be in the NIT.
Well, David, my final thought is that there is a way we can get all those teams into the NCAA tournament. We just got to add more teams because, you know, 68 is clearly not enough.
68 is clearly enough. I'll save my final thought on why it shouldn't even be that many for later in championship week. But I love championship week is my favorite 2 weeks of the year.
Yes, the best 13-day week out there.
All
begins tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern, with the games tipping off in the Patriot League and in the Atlantic Sun. But we'll be back, at least David and I, maybe some of the other panelists will be back tomorrow night at the conclusion of the games with our first of our championship week video notebooks, and we'll be talking to you every single night from here on out. So talk to you real soon, and thanks for joining us.